Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network, American Family Radio, AFR. You can get us on the internet at afr.net. You can also send us emails at comments at afr.net. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Well, what do we got coming up today here?
Well, in just a few minutes, we're going to have Craig Parshall on, who's a New York Times bestselling novelist. He's written a novel about spiritual warfare and about the unseen world. It's called The Occupied. We'll be talking to Craig about that. Bottom of the hour, Fred Jackson will be in talking about top headlines. I don't know why, though. There's hardly anything happening in the world. And Emily Foreman will be on next hour. That is actually a pseudonym. It's not her real name because she is a missionary in the Middle East. She's written a book titled We Died Before We Came Here, A True Story of Sacrifice and Hope. Her husband was actually killed by Al-Qaeda operatives when they were over there as missionaries. So we've talked about, Tim, a lot about Christians and what they're facing in the Middle East and other places that are controlled by Muslims and Muslim radicals. And so we'll be talking to Emily about the mission field.
All right, that's coming up on the program. I guess nothing's changed. The polls changed since yesterday, the presidential polls?
I have not seen any change in the polls. I just don't think there's been any new ones out.
So they showing a pretty tight race nationally.
Yes, it's
right now. We haven't even had the first debate, but still, as you made reference in our commentary, people start paying attention post Labor Day to
right. So we're in that that lane where people now, you know, along with their regular lives, start paying attention. So, you know, in just a couple of weeks, we'll have it's under 3 weeks now. We'll have the first debate.
26th, September 26th.
It's a Monday night. So people start to tune in a little more.
In this corner, weighing.
Yeah. Weighing what I – have no idea.
Huh? Weighing now, in.
You're not supposed to talk about a woman's weight.
Why?
So,
Why? I thought this we're supposed to be a gender-neutral
– Tim, you're operating apparently under the misconception that rules about women are rational.
Right.
They're not. It doesn't have to be reasonable.
I just thought we had moved past this gender identity stuff to a gender-neutral society. That's what we want, right? So what's fair to talk about with men, you can talk about
with
women.
Well, you just continue to operate under that principle.
Yeah, see how far that gets me?
Say to your waitress, you've been putting on weight. Been coming here for a while now. You look like you're getting bigger.
No, I wouldn't even say that to a dude, probably. Unless I was trying to help him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like for his health purpose. His health.
Oh, yeah.
But
I hear you.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk. We got a few minutes here. I wanted to talk about. So nothing's changed on the presidential polls. Pretty tight race so far nationally. We don't know the. I don't know what the swing states are showing. But I last time I checked a couple days ago, they were showing Hillary Clinton with a slight advantage in most of the swing states.
Right. That's what
and coming. But it's coming into the within the margin of error territory. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think the Democrats are sweating now because they never expected Donald Trump to be this close.
And probably felt that, you know, the truth was coming out after the Democratic National Convention and Hillary Clinton jumped up in, you know, some polls, 8%, 10% advantage. They probably thought, well, okay, this is the way the world is supposed to be. We'll leave Trump behind. Now it is tightened again. I think you're right. I think they're sweating because the more Trump hangs around,
right,
the closer he gets. One little misstep by Hillary Clinton, one revelation too many that might be the straw that breaks the camel's back. could be the thing that that you know tosses some people over the fence.
Well, yeah. So
you don't want it to be close.
It's like that. It's like that sports contest between two teams, and one team's supposed to really be better and is better,
right,
in terms of their players and talent, and yet they let the underdog hang around.
Yeah,
and hang around
till 2 minutes left. There's the fumble, and then they're lining up to kick a field goal that can ruin your season.
Right, it's something like that. Or a basketball metaphor, you would say. The other team's behind by two, but they got one great three-point shot, and he nails
anything
it.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen if you let your opponent hang around to the end of the contest. That's your point. And Donald Trump, so far, is, quote, hanging around when a lot of people thought he would already been put away.
Right.
So
a lot of Republicans, you know, underestimated Donald Trump through the primary season. A lot of pundits and experts. Remember how many people were saying, I thought this. Now, I'm not a paid, you know, pundit on, you know, a national television show, but how many people said, he'll be done by September, or he'll be done by Christmas, or he'll be done by the time the
his
first
obituary's
primary.
Been written many times.
Yeah. So this is and if you know, if you're just going to compare public service, obviously, Hillary Clinton is a very smart, polished politician. She's done this, and she's been shooting for this opportunity to be in the White House as the president, not the first lady, you know, for her whole life, her whole adult life. And once again, 8 years after the last time she was supposed to be a shoe-in, and she was upset by Barack
Obama.
She
would be, do you think she would be where she is if she hadn't married Bill Clinton?
No, I don't. And that's, I don't mean this is an insult to Hillary Clinton. I think she's a fairly average campaigner. I don't think she would have risen necessarily to, you know, this place of prominence in the Democratic Party had it not been for the opportunity that Bill Clinton being in the White House afforded her. Mm-hmm. So she was able to – she became – very powerful. I don't know that she's not a dynamic speaker. She plays it fairly safely when you talk about her, you know, her speeches in terms of her ideas. She's no Bernie Sanders, in other words. Bernie Sanders, a socialist, he's, you know, wants to take a wrecking ball to, you know, capitalism or whatever. She doesn't have that going for her, like an Elizabeth Warren. So I don't see how she would have risen to this place without, you know, I'm not saying that, I don't mean that in a sexist way. I'm just saying I don't see her having the skills to have arisen to a place of this kind of prominence. I don't think she would have even won as a senator in New York had she not been a former first lady. You know, she grew up, her you know, favorite baseball team used to be the Cubs. Or the White Sox, anyway, Chicago.
She grew up in Chicago.
And then she went to New York. Oh, yeah, I've always loved
New
York.
No. She went from Chicago to Arkansas.
Yeah, but I'm saying when she...
And then started talking Southern.
When she was talking about when she wanted to run as for Senate in New York, I've always loved whatever it was, the Yankees or the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going, wait a second. You used to be a Chicago fan. So I don't think she would have. I just don't think she would have.
Yeah, she was raised in Chicago. Went to school at Wellesley. Very famous. Well, it used to be. Is it a girls' school? Can you still call schools by gender
anymore?
I
don't know if Wellesley is all girls
then
anymore.
Then she married Bill Clinton, moved to Arkansas. He became governor. She became first lady. Then he won the Democrat nomination, then won the White House.
Yeah.
And was there 8 years. First president, I guess, in history that won the White House without ever getting 50% of the vote of the American people. You remember Ross Perot.
Right.
I think Bill Clinton got 42-43% of the vote the first time.
I think that's right.
I think Ross Perot. Ross Perot got above double digits, I think.
Yeah.
He got 12-13%.
Trying to remember.
Percent. Remember
back that far. I do remember saying
giant
after.
Sucking sound.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Giant sucking sound.
Mexico, giant sucking sound.
NAFTA.
Yeah.
He had, remember he had that half hour show where he bought
graphs and
time
charts.
And had the graphs and charts, and then just weird things happened. He pulled out of the race.
I'm mocking him on the Larry King show. Larry? I just remember him. Well, he was a smart guy.
Yeah.
Ross Perot was, but he, but anyway, and he built, he used his own money, much like Donald Trump.
Right.
To, but he was a third party guy, Ross Perot was. He sort of, he siphoned away, I don't know.
I think probably resulted in the defeat of George
Yeah, he did.
H.W. Bush.
Yeah, he didn't like him. That's the story. That he didn't.
But remember, he said weird things. He said people were out to get his daughter.
Pro didn't like Bush.
Yeah.
As the story goes, the two Texans. And so he did. The conventional wisdom is that he cost George Herbert Walker. Walker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Bush,
H.W. Bush.
The first, he cost him his re-election.
Yeah. But yeah. I do remember, I think you're right, because I do remember after Bill Clinton was elected. Saying, reading about the fact that because only 50% of the population eligible to vote voted, that Bill Clinton actually won with like 25% of the vote. Because
votes. I think the same thing happened 4 years later, wasn't it? Bob Dole?
'96.
It was Bob Dole versus Bill Clinton, and Ross Perot ran then, and I think he got 7-8%.
I think that's right.
I'm just recalling that by memory. So he arguably cost the Republicans twice. Ross Perot did the election. But back to the story about that's how Bill Clinton won twice.
Right.
Of course, his wife Hillary Clinton was very involved in his presidency.
Initially started the
Hillary Care,
the
forerunner to Obamacare. So she, that's how she, and then she ran for, and won the United States Senate seat in New York, having never lived in New York.
Right.
I guess,
Yeah.
I thought, I remember you're talking, is that called carpetbagging?
I think it can. Yeah, well, I think that she was called a carpetbagger.
How can you win a Senate race, which is a statewide race, if you never lived in the state? I don't get that.
Well, I think it's because all politics kind of is national now at that level. So people in New York say, listen, she's well-known. She's a rising star now since her husband's
out of office. But isn't the joke on you?
The joke's on you in New York State. No, I mean if you've got Hillary Clinton going to bat for you in New York, I mean
Senator. Yeah, and I just think maybe call me old fashioned. I just think that I said you could call me old fashioned,
yes.
But I said I'm making a point.
Yeah,
that you can call me old fashioned if you want.
No,
to.
I agree. It's not an insult.
But
I think it's the way people used to think.
I think that you should. Be from the state you run for the Senate. Huh? So Chicago to New York via Arkansas and Washington, D.C. and Shazam.
I don't think New Yorkers are so jaded. I don't think anybody believed her that she was – whatever team she was saying, Mets fan, Yankees. Oh, yeah, I've always been a fan. And I love you people and here. I think probably New Yorkers are going, I don't believe a word of any of that.
Yeah, but I vote for you anyway.
We just want somebody with some juice. In D.C.
We want a celebrity.
Yeah.
A former first lady.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, that's the saga and the story of how Hillary Clinton got to be. She parlayed. Some people say parlayed.
Oh, yeah.
Her
definite parlaying going on.
She wouldn't be the first person in America to parlay things. So I guess she's worked that to her advantage, and now she may be the next president should she win in November. And the first woman president.
Yes.
You keep being reminded of that,
right.
Too. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our guest now is Craig Parshall. Craig is a New York Times and CBA best-selling fiction writer and columnist, and he's worked with the National Religious Broadcasters for several years, and he is a... patriot and a good friend of ours here at American Family Radio. Craig, good morning to you.
Tim and Ed, wonderful to be back again.
What are you doing nowadays, brother? Hadn't talked to you in a while.
Well, first of all, pushing a book, and I'm glad that you happen to mention that I'm back in the writing business. But I'll tell you, writing fiction, it's pretty difficult to imagine fantastical things when you look at what the Obama administration is doing and what Hillary is saying. This is stranger than any fiction that anybody could read. But I have enjoyed, by the way, the last 2 years, taking on a position as special counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice. And my work constitutionally, I was a trial lawyer for a lot of years, and kind of dragging around the country to some lawsuits here and there. But I travel into Washington only when I have to either testify in Congress or help with drafting some Supreme Court briefs that we're working on and have seen some victory. So between that and my writing and enjoying my bride of many years, broadcaster Janet Parshall, life has been good.
Well, we love Janet. Please say hello to her for us. Craig, you've written this novel, The Occupied. This is about spiritual warfare. Now, you don't really believe that's real, do you? Spiritual warfare?
you'd think, having been a trial lawyer for a couple decades, that I would believe in Satan. Because I've seen some of his representatives in court. But on a serious note, this is my 12th novel, suspense novel, and all of my other books have had lawyers and courtrooms involved in them. I guess it's just imprinted in who I am. I was warped by the law, so I just can't crawl out of that box. And this has got a lawyer and some courtroom stuff in it, too, but it's really about a bigger battle than just in the courtroom, and even for the fight for family, faith, and freedom. This is about the big battle going on, and you just touched on it, Ed, and that is spiritual warfare. I'd call this one lawyer's epic battle with the world, the flesh, and the devil. And I wanted to kind of put a face on this unseen world that I really think is behind some of the macabre, terrible, awful stuff we're seeing in the headlines, whether it's ISIS or homegrown violence. The planet seems to be spinning off its axis in terms of the excess of evil out there. I mean, just bare-knuckled, awful evil. Where does it come from? And the book really tries to answer that in a creative fiction format. This is a lawyer who is given the gift, but it really ends up to be a burden, of being able to see what none of us can see, and that is piercing the veil and really seeing demonic activity for what it really might look like and what it's up to.
And the title of the book is The Occupied. Craig, you mentioned the word evil. That's amazingly a word that many people debate, because, well, as Tim has pointed out in this program numerous times, the Obama administration saying, well, we don't know what motivated this jihadist or this use jihadist, this man to do this. It's very difficult for the postmodern individual, the secular humanist, to talk about whether or not evil even exists, let alone spiritual evil. So the kinds of things that are happening must really put them in a corner, don't they?
Well, it ought to, if they would think logically about it. Either you excuse everything, or you can excuse nothing. If you excuse everything, it's a sociological argument. Well, he grew up in a bad neighborhood. Well, they're disenfranchised young Arab youth looking, for a job, and if we just give them a job and a degree, ISIS would go away. And of course, all that does is explain the circumstantial facts of their life. It doesn't explain how someone could actually lower themselves below the animal level. I mean, this is below the level of barbaric animal behavior. And in order to come up with it, either you justify all of it by sociology or you can't justify any of it that way. And then it raises the moral question, and that is there a right and a wrong, a good and an evil? And if that issue gets raised, you got to ask, well, who writes your moral code? You make it up yourself, because that's not reliable. And if you don't make it up yourself, then you better look for a transcendent moral code. And that brings in the whole issue of heaven and hell, God and demonic activity, and what we can't see, but for generations, millennia, human beings have intuited in one way or another, that there is a God and there is an evil force. And they are really at odds, and hanging in the balance is life here on Earth. People have a choice to make which side they're going to align themselves with.
Do you think that the more blatant demonstrations of evil around the world, do you think it makes the job of the atheist even more difficult in convincing Americans that there is no God, there is no devil, there is no soul? Because you're talking about something that I believe is absolutely true, that people have that internal awareness that there is a God, there is a spiritual realm. It really does. I mean, as atheism picks up at least a little bit of steam in our country, like it has, you know, dominated in Europe, it seems like that explicit evil and evil acts would make it harder for them to press their case.
You know, you just touched your finger on a tremendously important point. Now, back when I was trying to struggle with the meaning of life and before I turned my life around and had a faith encounter with Christ myself, I was reading the French existentialist who said, look, you make up your own moral code. There is no God. There is no heaven. There are no absolutes. You got to kind of create it on your own, and then when you die, you know that that's the end of everything. And yet, interestingly, they couldn't live that consistently out. Jean-Paul Sartre, the French existentialist, he was the leader of that movement. He was a hardened atheist, and yet he fought against the Nazis, and he was part of the French underground to stop what he saw as the blatant evil of Nazism. Now, why did he do that? I mean, if he protected himself, that's all he should have been concerned with. So you can't be an atheist and really be consistent with atheism, particularly secular atheism. But the interesting thing I see about the current, the coming out of this new form of atheism is they're confused about who they are. Pew Foundation had a survey a year or two ago about the spiritual state of the United States, and it marked a slight increase in the number of atheists. And yet among the atheists, a healthy percentage, a fairly large percentage, said that they considered themselves to be spiritual beings, but they were atheists. So I think they haven't got it figured out in terms of who they are.
Talking to Craig Parshall, he's got a new novel out called The Occupied. This is novel number 13?
Actually, it's my suspense novel. I guess it's 12 or 13, you start losing track. I think it's 12. Yeah.
Well, but 13, that would be an appropriate number for a book about
well,
spiritual.
You'll have to wait till next year because that one's coming out next year.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen, Craig, thanks for being our guest. Appreciate it very much, and wish you the best with the book, and look forward to talking to you again sometime real soon.
It's always a pleasure, and thanks for standing strong.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Occupied. That is the name of the book by Craig Parshall. It is a spiritual thriller about spiritual warfare.
You know, the first guy on the scene with a novel about spiritual warfare that kind of made a big splash was Frank Peretti.
Right. I remember that in the 80s.
What was the name of that? His first
book? Piercing the Darkness, I think. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or was it This Present Darkness?
This Present Darkness.
Okay.
Did you read that?
I did.
That was very popular.
It was. That's when a lot of Bible teaching was, you know, teaching about spiritual warfare. And there was a sequel to it or a subsequent novel that might have been Piercing the Darkness. I don't remember. But This Present Darkness, I think, is the first.
Okay, we're going to take a break right here. We'll be back with more. Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and OneNewsNow.com, will be with us. I'm assuming he will be. I don't see him.
I see him.
Oh, there he is. He's in our green room.
Our green room. Snacks, bottled water.
We're very environmental friendly.
We got nothing out
there.
We're
very environmental friendly here. Our green room.
Bring your own snacks.
All right, we'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
We'll be right back. I think I've got a stumper for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
That's funny now. But put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is.
But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary, and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next. President Obama stood on foreign soil the other day and took a few cheap shots at America. The president's latest USA shaming took place during a town hall gathering at the Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative in Laos. In responding to a question, he said he agreed with people who say America is not perfect, says we still have problems to work on. The president went on to lecture students about the importance of treating everyone with dignity and respect. Now, that's pretty ironic, coming from a man who once described people who own guns and go to church as bitter Americans. President Obama also suggested Americans are lazy, talking about how we should be learning about other countries. So the man who's played 186 rounds of golf since putting his hand on the Bible is calling us lazy? This guy really doesn't like us much, does he? I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano, and Fred Jackson joins us, Fred's news director for American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. How you doing, Fred?
Good to be with you guys. Thank you for all the treats in the green room there. I'm raring
hey,
to go.
Only the best for our guests. So
if you got treats in our green room,
right?
There was must have been crumbs left over from someone who had lunch there or something.
We do have flavored coffee though.
Yeah, we do.
And popcorn.
We do have free popcorn.
Free popcorn machine.
We call it Obama corn.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's free.
But you do have to get there before Ed gets there in the morning though.
Yes.
Yeah, there's not much left.
Ed's lined up at the popcorn machine.
You can't be lined up by yourself.
You are.
Unless you're
at 7:50.
Making a fat joke. Okay? Ed forms his own line.
He's got his. Who pops the popcorn back there, by the way?
Ron Cook usually does.
Ron, he does the coffee, too.
Oh, hey, let me tell you, Ron is a connoisseur.
Well, he's also got good job security.
Yes, he does. I'll fight for his job.
Well, if he's making all the coffee and popcorn, I mean, who's going to do that if you know, if he's not here.
What do they call it? Multi-skilling, isn't it?
Multitasking, multi-skilled.
That's right.
Multi-skilled.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get into the really hard news, you know, Tim Tebow is trying to make it in baseball. Did you see this?
Yes, I did.
He is 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't played baseball since he was in high school. And he signed a minor league contract with the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love Tim Tebow and his testimony and his character and what he stands for. This is not going to go well. Huh? There is nothing harder in sports, arguably. It may not even be arguable. than hitting a major league pitch.
That's probably a true statement.
All right.
What could be hard? I'm not sure what
a
could
major
be harder
league,
than that.
A major league pitcher brings the ball from home plate, from the pitching mound to home plate. They haven't reversed it, have they?
No.
The pitcher didn't line up at home plate, throw it to pitcher's mound, right?
No, you're right.
Okay, so it's still like it always was. And the ball arrives from the pitcher's mound to the catcher in two blinks of your eye. Blink your eye twice.
Yeah, because they're doing the speeds now. I'm amazed. 95 miles an hour sometimes?
They're doing the speeds now.
No. He's talking about clocking the pitches.
The speed of the ball.
They clock every pitch.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
No, I would say the average major league pitcher throws 90. 91,
that's
92.
The average, and then you get
that's the average.
The fireballers that can go over.
I've 100. Been in. I've been. This is a long time ago. I've been in a batting cage with a machine that was said to be throwing 90 miles an hour, and of course I wasn't a baseball player. I was a basketball, but I couldn't see the ball.
Right.
You couldn't see the ball. So my point is,
let alone get your bat in motion,
yes,
and then connect with it.
Oh, it's just luck. It's just throw the bat out there and hope it meets the ball. If you're somebody like me,
yeah.
But so you got that much time to figure out. Okay, two blinks of an eye. So and then you have to figure out whether it's a fastball, curveball, slider, sinker,
where it's going,
and then connect with the bat and try to get a hit.
And often drive it where you want it to go.
Right.
Hit behind the runner or
something
like that.
The most successful players in baseball are only so 3 times out of 10.
Yes.
As hitters.
And that's an excellent average, 300.
Yes, that's what I mean. 3 out of 10 times, you get a hit, you can be in the Hall of Fame. If you do enough of that, that's the only – that just shows you the degree of difficulty to succeed at a major league level. So I would say good luck to Tim Tebow, but I think
now he's signed by the Mets.
I give him 2 months.
2 months.
So it goes to the question though: why would they do that? For all the reasons you just outlined, Tim.
You mean the Mets?
Why would New York do this?
Oh, they're going to sell shirts.
Yeah, and now I understand he crushed a ball 400 feet. Now it's batting practice. That's not the same.
Oh, he's huge. I mean, he's 6'3", 250, very athletic. No question about that. I'm just saying you want to see how hard it is to hit a major league pitch, and he hadn't even got to the major leagues. He's in the minor leagues.
Right.
Hadn't played baseball for 10 years. You're going to see this.
Right.
You're going to see – well, I'm going to get people email me now. Oh, get off Tim Tebow.
Well, that may be
God's plan for his life is to play major league baseball.
Well, that's why I emailed you back when you sent that around, or Fred sent it around, because it's on One News Now if people want to read it. It's on the right-hand column under Stories from Associated Press. But you sent that he sent it around, and you said this is not going to last long, and that's why I answered you. I said in all caps,
Tebow hater. Yeah, calling me a Tebow hater. I'm just saying that this is going to be over pretty quick.
Other excellent athletes have tried, Michael Jordan. You know, he left basketball for a while and went
to
the White
baseball.
Sox. And it's like you said, it's a tremendously difficult sport. Well, all sports have their challenges, obviously. If it was easy, everyone could do it. But hitting a baseball, I just can't, I can't think of another thing that would be harder.
The last time Tim Tebow played baseball was in high school. That was 10 years ago.
Right.
And now you're going to try to make it in. Mm. Anyway, God bless him and good luck.
And we love Tim Tebow.
We love Tim Tebow and I guess I could make everybody happy by saying I think probably he'll make it, but that would be dishonest. I think this will be over in about 2 months.
Well,
but we will see.
Too bad he just wasn't good enough to play as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, well,
I'm just tweaking.
Now you're being mean.
I'm just.
You're being downright.
Now you're going to get the email.
Yeah. I know. I was doing that on purpose.
Send your emails to Ed.
On purpose, all those folks out there.
Hey.
Spitting up their coffee.
God bless Tim Tebow. May he have many years in Major League Baseball. we'll see about that. All right, Fred. Ed and I were talking here earlier. Do you believe the polls? Do you think it's a tight race between?
Oh, it's very tight.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think, and the Clinton camp is not arguing that. In fact, I was listening to an impromptu news conference this morning by Hillary Clinton on the tarmac before she boarded her brand new plane, and she was asked about that. She said she was asked by a reporter who dared to challenge her on something. They're rare, those reporters. You know, you're only 2 points apart. With Donald Trump. Aren't you a little concerned about that? And, you know, she said, well, we're not taking anything for granted. And it's true. I mean, they are spending, the Clinton camp, millions of dollars. They've got a much larger ground game than what Donald Trump
right.
does. And she's got the money. I mean, she raised, what, $110 million a couple of weekends ago?
Yeah.
And a couple of her fundraisers.
Donald Trump spending any money?
Very little.
Very little. He's doing, you know,
Why not?
Everything you're supposed to do in a presidential bid, starting with the primaries, now the general election campaign, everything you're supposed to do, he's doing the opposite. I mean, he doesn't, my understanding
is. He's like George Costanza in Steinfeld.
Yes, it's the opposite.
I'm going to do everything the opposite.
He doesn't have, I don't think, much of a ground game.
No.
He's not running ads.
No.
Hillary's been running, we've talked about this on the program, the same ad on TV land, you know, for the last 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
She's running a lot of ads. Everything you're supposed to do, he does the opposite.
But here's, you know, I think he's practicing what worked for him during the primaries.
Right.
He keeps saying stuff that gets him attention.
Yeah.
You cannot go like an hour on network news television without seeing Donald Trump saying something.
Right.
Now, often, depending what network you're watching, it's put in a negative context.
Right.
But it's the old saying go, you know, whether it's negative or positive, if you're out there, your face is out there.
Yes.
And what has happened, though, is that his way of delivering his message has been massaged, and he's brought in this new team in the last couple of weeks. And even some of those, who was it, Lindsey Graham, who was a huge critic.
Right.
He was
a never-Trumper for a while.
He was a never-Trumper, but he was quoted yesterday saying, hey, listen, I'm taking a second look at him, because if he keeps doing what he's been doing over the last couple of weeks, stick with the teleprompter.
Yeah.
You know, deliver your message. Stay consistent, but deliver it in a slightly more polished way, you're going to do well. Donald Trump is a smart enough businessman to know, okay, he's got all these advisors now around him. I'm going to take that and run with it.
Yeah.
But he's just an unorthodox politician. He
yeah.
really is. He was asked the other day whether he's preparing for the first big debate, which is the 26th of this month.
Right.
And he said, well, kind of. Now, Hillary Clinton's got a whole team. She's got a team of 10 psychologists who are trying to analyze Donald Trump's brain so they can figure out ways to make him angry during
yeah.
the debate. So that's where she's going to town. And she admitted she's working, you know, all the time on getting ready for
the first
debate.
Debate's going to be critical for her, especially.
Donald Trump was asked the same question. He said, yeah, I'm doing some preparation, but he says, I'm of the philosophy you can over-prepare.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can get your list of 10 questions and I'm all ready for those. And then somebody asks something that I'm not ready for and you get all flustered.
Yeah.
So they're saying, you know, he's smart. He wants to stay a little bit loose about this so that he's ready to respond. It's like last night during this town hall on NBC. I mean, he was asked about the generals. And, you know, he was saying, well.
Not the Washington.
No.
But. Baseball team.
No, he's asked about the military
the
generals.
Nationals, never mind. The generals.
And he said
generals?
A couple of things that you would never probably hear a Republican or Democrat candidate say. He said, well, I'm probably going to fire a couple of them that are there now. They've been left to rubble by the Obama administration, meaning basically Obama is the commander in chief and he's running the military show and not depending on his generals. And then they got upset with him because he wouldn't give a specific plan last night on how to fight ISIS. But that's part of his thinking and his criticism of the current administration, saying the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton, they network what they're going to do with the troops on how to defeat ISIS, which she did again last night. She told the enemy, we will never put ground troops into Iraq and Syria. Well, if the enemy hears that, then they know how to prepare for whatever may happen.
She said never?
She said, I will never put boots on the ground in Iraq or Syria. Now, she qualified that a little bit this morning by saying, that doesn't preclude sending intelligence people in or bombing. So she knew she was caught a little bit on that.
Yeah, I just don't know how anybody can say they do, but I just think I don't see how anyone who wants to be president can look into the future and say, I will never do anything.
That's, exactly.
How do you...
You get burned on that.
By the way, just want to just make mention of the fact this is breaking news. We can, of course, we don't know much, so we can return to this discussion afterwards. But it is being reported that there is an active shooter at a high school in Alpine, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
At least one person hospitalized. I think we have a radio station in that area. So a shooter opened fire at Alpine High School. This is from the New York Daily News. In Alpine, Texas, Alpine police said there's an active shooter. Other schools in the district are on lockdown. So anyway, folks, be praying for Alpine High School. We don't know any other details. No one else does either at this time.
Do you know where Alpine?
It's in Southwest Texas. We just put a story up on,
okay.
on one
oh, you
news
did?
Now.
Yeah. Okay.
It's in Southwest Texas, very small town. There are about 200 students in this high school there. And they are looking for this active shooter.
Okay, 200 miles southeast of El Paso.
El Paso.
Okay, I thought it was breaking news right this moment. You guys are already on it. American Family News.
Southeast of El Paso.
Of El Paso. 200 miles.
That's in Mexico. Almost.
It's right down on the Mexico.
Yeah, it must be.
It's Brewster County.
Must be right down the
Brewster County.
On the border.
Yeah. On the border, yeah.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Fred Jackson in with us. By the way, what's on the front page of OneNewsNow.com right now?
OneNewsNow.com, you'll find certainly the stories we've been talking about, what happened last night. You'll find certainly that story there. Also, a story that we're working on right now, and we're hoping to get some reaction to it later today, and that's Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. And now he wasn't on the Matt Lauer NBC town hall last night, but he was on an MSNBC program, and he was asked about, what do you think about the situation in Aleppo?
Now that's the kind of ground zero for the refugee crisis in Syria.
In Syria.
Yeah.
What's Aleppo was his response.
So he's the...
Libertarian.
Libertarian candidate. He's polling 6-7%.
Yes.
7%.
Yeah. He's the he's former U.S. senator, but he's
governor of
too.
New Mexico.
Yeah,
governor of New Mexico. I think he was a senator, but I know he was.
He might have been.
But he was governor of New Mexico, so he's running as a third party. Well, there's a four party now because you got the Green Party, but the Libertarian Party. So he's being asked about Syria and the refugee problem, and he doesn't know.
Aleppo is that area.
What did the interviewer
Northern
say?
Syria.
So that's an embarrassing moment.
At the very minimum, an embarrassing moment. You're running for president of the United
right,
States.
Right, you don't know what that is.
And you don't know this critical area in Syria.
Right.
It's divided. Assad's people have the West, the rebels, which some people say embedded al-Qaeda people in the East. Aleppo was in the front pages just a few weeks ago. Remember the picture of little boy?
Right.
He survived the bombing on the hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, it captured
right.
a moment. That picture was everywhere.
The kid looked like he was in
sweet little
still
boy.
In shock.
Yeah, sweet just, little boy. I mean, it was just a depiction of these are the innocent victims
right.
of this horrible war that's going on. That was everywhere. It was everywhere.
Right.
And Johnson says, what's Aleppo?
Now, this was on MSNBC, right? He's being
last
interviewed
night.
By Mike Barnacle.
Yeah.
I think that's how you pronounce his name. And so he asked, and so Johnson said, what is Aleppo? And Barnacle said, you're kidding. And he said, no. Now, we joked a little bit before the show, before you came on during the break, Fred, because
uh-huh.
one of the things Gary Johnson is known for is his desire to see pot legalized, recreational use. So
Twitter and all those, they're making mention of what you just mentioned.
So, dude, what's Aleppo? I mean, it's just part of that pothead mentality.
Is that like avocado? What is that exactly?
What's that?
What did you call it?
Aleppo?
Yeah, I know
what he would say.
What he would say, is that like avocado or whatever?
Yeah.
Well, there's political significance to this. We're joking a little bit about it, but because some people like Mitt Romney have mentioned that Gary Johnson is a viable alternative to Trump
He did. Mitt Romney said that.
Romney is a never Trumper, and so he had taken. You know, people should take a serious look at. Of course, he does. He knows that Johnson would never win.
Right.
But Mitt Romney has such a strong dislike for Trump that he would like to put at least Johnson in a positive spin. But that's what's been going on out there. But Johnson's going to hurt himself. The question is, being a libertarian, if this kills Johnson's candidacy by this mistake last night, where are those people going to go? Because right now, as you mentioned a few moments ago, the polls are really, really tight.
Yeah.
The CNN poll from last weekend has Trump up a couple of points. Rasmussen's been polling. Trump has been doing extremely well. So where would those 7 percentage points, 8 percentage points
go? Because Jill Stein, who's the candidate for the Green Party, she's polling at like 3% or something like
that. And she's got charged now. She's just been charged.
She's been charged.
Yes. She was up at some pipeline protest up in the Northwest there, and I guess she did some damage to something or whatever. Anyway, she's been formally charged with obstruction or damaging.
Because those like that 3% that's you know in her corner, they're sold out. This will probably make her go up a point, you know, because these are the Bernie Sanders people who will never, they're never Hillary people.
Yeah.
So
this is an unusual election cycle. It really is an unusual.
Can I ask you another question regarding this race? I just started seeing this. You probably know a little bit more about it than I do. Just started seeing it today. The Clinton camp is denying that Hillary Clinton at this foreign policy forum was wearing an earpiece. Have you seen this? And it's not the only time
it's
showed up.
We're checking on it.
Yeah, she's wearing an earpiece, which is cheating.
Yes.
Because it allows, if she is wearing one, it allows staff members to tell her stuff if
coach
she's stumped.
You.
Yeah, coach you through it. Uh-huh. Apparently, it's the kind of earpiece that they use, when you're in big plays, on Broadway and those kind of things. So if you forget a line, someone can speak. So this when you talk about this being a weird election, it just gets weirder by
the moment.
Is
that true? Was she wearing an earpiece?
We're checking on that because when I first heard that, I said, you know, and one of our guys from One News Now came in and said, you know, it's probably one of these conspiracy things. But then we started checking, and it's out there in other sources as well.
Right.
So as Ed is saying, I don't think this would even be allowed. It would probably be illegal in a formal debate.
Right. It'd be considered cheating. You'd be breaking the rules.
Exactly.
Like having a crib sheet.
Exactly.
You glance down.
But listen, this is Hillary Clinton. So you cannot just say, "Oh no, that would never happen." Yes, it might. You know,
I saw the picture. It's on Drudge front and center. I looked at the picture. My first thought was it looks more like maybe a hearing aid or something. But you know, but she apparently says no. My camp says it's she can hear fine.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is just a weird. It's just
there's
weird.
Something in her ear.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like something there. But obviously, if she's got an earpiece and she's able to get transmissions, you know, from her staff, it's cheating.
Yeah. Here's what you need to say now. Bring this up. You know, she's got somebody in her ear chattering. Yeah.
No, Aleppo. That's the epicenter of the refugee crisis in Syria. That's a pretty big advantage. You just hesitate, look like you're thinking. Now, Hillary's she's a very smart lady.
I don't know. That would be distractive. In other words, if you're sitting there trying to answer a question, if you were in a debate with 10 people and you had an earpiece and your staff was telling you the answers to the questions, you know, as you go along, you need to say this, you need to say that. That's one thing. You might could get by with that. However, a one-on-one with Matt Lauer, and I think you would be able to notice whether or not somebody is listening to an earpiece as they're trying to answer their questions. Because, I mean, that would be distractive. I doubt there's something in her ear. Okay. There's something. I'm sitting here looking at there's something in her ear, But I doubt that it's...
Look at it this way. Now, I want to say, first off, for all you Hillary fans out there, I think Hillary is very, very smart. And I don't think she needs much prompting when it comes to, you know, facts. You know, the name of this leader, that leader. I think she's beyond that. But if you are concerned about getting hit with a question you're not prepared for, or you momentarily forget... You know, something, it would be, you know, when you have someone on Broadway who's one of your main actors in a play, you pretty much figure they're going to know the lines. But if there's a moment when you sense they've forgotten, you can help. Now, I'm not saying this is, but like you said, there's something in her ear. There's something in her ear.
It's the name of a song, and, isn't there?
Yes.
There's something in her ear. With Dinah, something in the ear, I know. I think that's
the question. Is what is it? Huh? If it's not a hearing aid, if it's a hearing aid, fine. She says, "Look, I have some problems." But she doesn't want to point out that she's, you know, getting up there in age. But she's younger than Donald Trump, so
her name is Hill Eary.
Mm-hmm. Hill Eary.
That's duly noted, Fred. That's a good, good thing to point out there. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hey, on a more somber, serious, and sad note, you've got a story on One News Now about the passing of Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes.
We talked about this briefly a couple days ago. Phyllis Schlafly, just a champion of, I guess you could say, pro-life.
Yeah.
The pro-life message.
She's the family,
the
marriage.
Family, traditional values. Mm-hmm. She was the leader of Eagle Forum. She led the fight against what was called the Equal Rights Amendment. So she passes away at 92.
We've been interviewing her on a regular basis.
Oh, sharp as a tack.
She's back in the news because she was one of the first to endorse Donald Trump.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She came
she
out
did.
In support of him. And she a lot of controversy over that, but she was there. She was at the Republican convention in Cleveland. She was there in
I
a
didn't
wheelchair.
Know that.
Yeah, she was there in a wheelchair. This is the kind of woman that she was.
She's been on with us two or three times a year, I guess, on this program. Mm-hmm. She was for many years, and always, as I say, very articulate. Didn't matter her age; you could tell she had a good mind. And so sad to see that she's died. She lived in the St. Louis area, Alton, Illinois. She was a good friend of my dad's, I used to see her a couple times a year. Phyllis Schlafly, she passes away.
Brilliant lady, Harvard grad. Grad of Harvard
Law
School.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Feminists hated her.
Yes.
They hated her, and one of the reasons why she was so smart and so successful, yet she promoted traditional values when it came to the home and to marriage and to family and raising kids, fought against the Equal Rights Amendment, was instrumental in defeating that. I mean, it sounds innocuous. It sounds like a great idea, but it would have changed our culture dramatically. That was back in the 70s and 80s. And but the piece that appears on onenewsnow.com is titled "Even in Passing, Classy Lady Reveals Classless Left," capital
yeah.
L, because leftists, some, not all, I'm not going to say this about all, just said horrible things in the wake of the news that she had passed away.
Oh, yeah.
These people were vile.
Were celebrating.
Yes.
They were celebrating. It was ugly.
Okay, Fred, so if people want to get their news from a news source that we provide, where can they go?
OneNewsNow.com, OneNewsNow.com, and our radio newscast also let you folks know this morning. We are spreading across the country with our affiliates. California, we're in Austin, Texas now.
Can you sign up for a news brief, a daily news brief that you'll send?
Absolutely. Go to One News Now, sign up for the daily news brief. You'll get it in your box once a day. We're not going to pester you.
Okay.
Once a day.
Folks, if you're tired of the liberal bias of the media and looking for somewhere to get your news, go to onenewsnow.com and get your daily news brief. We'll be back in 5 minutes after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.